Well, thank you very much, Liz, and good morning. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name is Mike, and I'm one of the pastors here at Redeemer. And we've been going through this series on Proverbs. Hopefully, it's been possible to sort of follow along. Each sermon each week has been maybe slightly different. This is the first time that we've sort of had a bit of continuity in Proverbs. 2 weeks ago, I preached on Proverbs 31, verses 1 through 9. If you weren't here for that, that's not a problem. I'll be doing a bit of a recap today. But for people who might be watching online or listening to the podcast, I definitely recommend you listen to the sermon from 2 weeks ago on Proverbs 31, 1 to 9 first, because it'll just give you a bit more background information, a bit more flavor about where we're coming from, some stuff that I won't have time to go over in its entirety today. But as I say, for those who are in the room and thinking, uh-oh, I wasn't here 2 weeks ago, shall I just go to sleep? No, you'll still gain plenty from this. I'll still recap and tell you the bits you need to know today. And it's always good. I always have this moment when someone starts reading the Bible passage that I'm like, I hope they read the right one. I hope they read the one I was expecting to preach on, because there's always that awkward feeling that maybe you've read the schedule wrong. But this has been quite handy because I've been preaching on these back to back. And so there is going to be a bit of a linking between the two as I go through today. But the first thing I want to mention will sort of tangentially relate to Proverbs 31, but it's a personal story, and it's a personal story from my mum. I visited my parents last weekend and got in a conversation with my mum about some things that are going on in their church and about some work they're doing in the community, some people they're relating with, and some challenges they're having in that process. And during that conversation, we got talking about mental health. And mental health is quite a sensitive topic for my mum. And I've asked her if I can talk about this morning, and she's given me her permission. I don't know if she's going to listen back, but hopefully I do her justice in it. And we had a conversation about her own history of struggles with mental health. During my teenage years, for sort of maybe around a 10-year period, my mum struggled with varying levels of depression. And there were a myriad causes for that, and obviously over a 10-year period, there are many different things that precipitates, different things that lead to that, things that lead to sort of triggers and relapses and various conditions. But some of the things she said that she started with, some of the weights that were on her mind when she first realized she was becoming depressed, when this was becoming an issue in her life, were the expectations that primarily she was placing on herself for her life. She told me that she expected two things of herself. She expected that she should be a perfect mother and that she should be a perfect wife. And these two things had been handed down to her over her years of therapy and counselling. She realised these expectations that she was placing on herself had been handed down to her from her own mother, who herself had had a pretty troubled childhood and had vowed that it would not be the same with her children, with her family. And what had begun as, I think, a good and noble pursuit, I do not want my children to go through what I went through, became a driving force. I must be perfect. I must be perfect for them. If I'm not perfect for them, they will suffer the way I suffered, and I cannot allow that. And my mother had internalized this, and she'd gone through with this to the level of every single time something went wrong, every single time her kids didn't behave, every single time maybe her and my dad had an argument or just a discussion that didn't go right, it was like she was being shown her failures. She was being told, you failed again. You failed again. You've got it wrong again. When are you going to start getting it right? Why do you keep failing at this? And this was dragging her down. It was crushing her. And over many years and over various things of therapy, over especially group therapy that she was doing, which she eventually went on to work for the NHS, leading group therapy for other people who've been in the same situation, she was brought to a realization that her failings were not something that she had to internalize in this way, that each time she failed at something, that was not a failure of her entire life. It was just this one thing that went wrong one time. And actually, everything can continue and everything can be okay after that. And the next time, and the next time, and the next time. Her requirement was not to be perfect, perfect in her role as a mother, perfect in her role as a wife, perfect in her role in the community or in her job. That was not a requirement on her. And I was struck by talking about this, and I mentioned that I was actually going to be preaching this week on Proverbs 31. And she said, yeah, that's a passage that's helped me, but it's also a passage that places a lot of requirements on people. The passage that can place a lot of heavy load on those who are already heavy burdened. So I decided that this morning I'm going to have to bring that up. I'm going to have to talk about the burdens that we give ourselves and where Scripture should be speaking into those. Because I don't believe that we should read Proverbs 31 this morning and walk away heavily laden. I don't believe that we should be seeing this as something we must accomplish, or else we won't be loved by our children or our families or by God. Instead, I believe that this talks to something more. This talks to something greater, a greater picture than just whether or not we can achieve a goal, whether or not we can get up at the right time in the morning, whether or not we can work out at the right time, whether or not we get that promotion, whether or not our kids learn to swim or get their A-levels. It speaks to something else. And I want us to explore that together this morning. I want us to realize there are good goals we can have that come from looking at the Scriptures. And I want to realize there's always something else besides ourselves in these passages. Now, two weeks ago, we talked about the writer, King Lemuel. One of the things I've been doing as part of practicing for these sermons is reading them out to an AI tool, which kind of transcribes what I'm saying, makes it easier for me to just sort of go on a tangent and see what it says afterwards rather than having to type it all down. And it gives you like a word cloud, tells you what word you've said the most, which is really handy. Lemuel, it's really struggled with. So every time I say Lemuel, I kind of laugh to myself at all the different interpretations that AI has come up with for the word Lemuel. I can go over them, some of them with you afterwards if you want. But King Lemuel is the person writing this passage. But we mentioned last time that he's writing it because he's been passed this wisdom down. He's been passed this wisdom by his mother. His mother's passed it to him, presumably because she wants him to follow her advice. And clearly he's taken this advice to heart. He sees this advice as important because he's choosing to write it down to pass on to his offspring. So well done, Lemuel's mother. And so we talked about the fact that Lemuel's mother has this great love and desire for her son. She wants to shape the kind of person, the kind of king he's going to become. And in the last passage, we talked about the fact that she wasn't giving him a list of rules. She wasn't saying, do this, do this, do this, and everything will be okay. She was trying to shape his character, and we're going to come to character a bit later as well today. What's interesting about verses 10 onwards is the entire tone, the entire way the passage is being written changes. The previous section is kind of written like conventional wisdom literature, you know, my son, my beloved, do this. It's all this thinking about wisdom and trying to sort of urge. And then at verse 10, it suddenly changes. It changes into a poem. It's now a poem, and we refer to it often as the poem of the virtuous woman or wife of noble character. Both those translations kind of work. And this is a poem. It's all it's known as an acrostic poem. An acrostic poem, for anyone not familiar with the word acrostic, is a poem which begins with consecutive letters of something. Kids like doing acrostics. You'll find acrostics in crossword puzzle books. And this is an acrostic where each line begins with a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And that's quite interesting. There's some effort gone into this. To make an acrostic poem, you have to think quite carefully about what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, because you're giving yourself this requirement. Well, I've got to choose the right letter. If anyone's ever played the alphabet game with their children and tried to go through naming different things, you always have this moment when you get to X and you're like, oh, I don't want to just say X-ray again or xylophone, you know. But you're very limited in your choices when you take that approach, and yet that's what this passage does. I'm not going to read out the Hebrew of it because I looked up pronouncing a few of the words, and I honestly can't. But this is an acrostic poem, and there's got to be some reason for that, and I think the reason is why we're reading it today. It's memorable. If someone teaches you something, they teach you, and they teach you in a rhyming manner, or I don't know, even a limerick, you'll remember that. It will stick in your mind. And it worked, because Lemuel's remembered what his mother told him and ended up writing it down, and it's got into Proverbs, and we're reading it today here in Manchester. There's a reason this passage is meant to be memorable. It's meant to be more than just do these things. If Lemuel's mother wanted to say, oh, find a good wife, that would have been a very short, snappy sentence. She didn't need to write a poem to encourage that. So this is speaking more than just the wife that Lemuel needs to find. And also, we should note that Lemuel was a king. Most likely the wife he had would have probably come from an arranged marriage with a nearby ruling dynasty of some other country. That tended to be how royal marriages worked in this time. So once again, Lemuel's mother can't just be giving him a list of things to go and look for in his own wife. It's a kind of strange list if you imagine a king sort of trying to pick this out. So once again, where is the deeper meaning? Where's the meaning for us? And so as we go through the passage today, we're going to break it down into three sections. It's always good to break things down into three sections. I've got some memorable ways to come over this. Instead of sort of alliteration, if you remember last time we did vices, virtue, and vocation, I was proud of that one. This time, the memorable manner is that we're going to do the points on the first verse. So the first verse, a wife of noble character who can find. So we're going to have a section on a wife, a section on noble character, and a section on the question, who can find. So, firstly, a wife. When I looked up this passage, when I knew I was preaching on this passage, I did what I usually do, and I Googled it. You find out what other people are saying about it. That doesn't mean you necessarily always copy what they're saying. Sometimes you go entirely opposite. But it's good to know where the culture is, because I know that people in this room will be doing the same thing. They will listen to a sermon, then they'll go home and look it up online and see what other people say. It's a fair thing to get different opinions and different points of view. And generally, when you search any passage online, you'll find, especially in this day, especially since COVID, where obviously all these churches suddenly got streaming equipment and started broadcasting every week, you can now go and watch a million sermons on most Bible passages because all these churches are streaming weekly. And so you generally get the same thing. You get a list of churches, usually the, you know, the bigger popular churches whose algorithms are boosted to the top are at the top, and so you hear from the more popular preachers. But Proverbs 31 is kind of different. What you get with Proverbs 31 is a fairly long list of videos that say how to be a Proverbs 31 woman. I don't think I've seen how to be a, insert Bible passage here, man. Maybe you get a bit with the pastoral epistles, Timothy and Titus, but not a huge amount. But how to be a Proverbs 31 woman is like the top few pages of results when you search for Proverbs 31. Videos, usually by women. Articles, again, often by women. I read one article where the writer, I think slightly cynically, referred to Proverbs 31 as one of the Bible's pink passages. As if the Bible has a small subset that are for women and that I don't know, the rest are for men? I think she was making a joke about it, and I hope so. So it's quite easy to see that our cultural context for this passage is quite interesting. We live in a culture which would generally say we consider genders, male, female, equal. We consider people equal. I think we're probably further back on that whole process than we think we are. And I think the church maybe has part of that, but I don't think that's entirely the church. I think it's the culture as well. I think in some ways we've swung from saying, oh, well, women should only do this, to, oh, women should do all these things and make sure you do all of them really well and better than men. Reading some commentary on the women's football the last few weeks has kind of brought that forward a little bit. So we want to look at this context. Why is it that this passage is being seen so much as how to be a Proverbs 31 woman? Is it talking to a woman? Is it in the Bible to say, hey, women, this is the list of things. You've got, what have we got, 21 verses in an acrostic poem, no less, that you have to match up to. Well, I think that kind of misplaces things. Because this wasn't written to a woman. This was written to a king. And it was written to a king who realistically wasn't going to be choosing his wife by, you know, dating widely around the community. He was probably going to have a fairly narrow set of people to choose from when it came to marriage. He's being taught something not about his wife, but about his people, the people he's ruling. And we know that that was on Lemuel's mother's mind because of the previous passage, verses 8 and 9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Her main consideration is that her son, as a good ruler, represents his people fairly. And how is he going to do that? If, like many kings, many rulers, he disregards the voices and opinions of roughly 50% of his population. He needs to understand, and he needs to see women in a light that's probably quite different to what kings would be seeing women as at this time. And I think we can do the same. Verse 11 is really interesting in this passage. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. I should mention at this point that the passage in general is talking about a wife. That is a context. It is talking about a wife. That doesn't mean it has nothing to say to women who are not married or who do not want to get married, who not intend to get married. It doesn't mean it has nothing to say to men who are unmarried or who, again, aren't going to get married. But the context here about her husband is very interesting nonetheless. Her husband has full confidence in her. The word for full confidence that's used here is a word that is, for pretty much the entire rest of Scripture in Hebrew, reserved for the word trust that is used in the context of people trusting God. In all other cases, it appears especially in some of the Old Testament books, especially the book of Judges, when it's talking about the Israelites trusting in God for their deliverance. This word trusting is very rarely in the Bible. I think there's one other case applied to two people, to humans. It is generally a word reserved for trusting in God. Now, the kind of trust we can and should have in God is an all-encompassing trust. We trust God with everything because God gave us everything. It would be foolish not to trust God with everything because without God, we can't do anything. We wouldn't have anything. But in this sense, it says her husband has full confidence in her. This wife's husband has the same level of trust in her that is normally reserved for man and God. And there's a point being made here. There's a point about the level of trust a husband must have in his wife for this. And I think that is a point we can really take account of. For people who are married here, for people who want to be married here, could we have this kind of trust in our wives? Could we have this kind of trust? Could we have a trust that says, if you do something, I will simply say yes? I will not say, oh, have you checked that thing? Or, oh, did you look? Did you do price comparison? Did you talk to them first? Could we just say yes? Of course, that doesn't mean there's not discourse in a household. There are not things that we talk about and things that we go over. But the point is that where it matters, where there is a point where our wives are saying to us, this is a thing, this is the thing I'm doing, trust me, are we saying okay? We're not saying, oh, can you prove this first? What if you get it wrong, though? What if you get it wrong and it affects me somehow? We're simply saying yes. There's a challenge in that. That requires some work. But I definitely think that's something we should take from this passage. Because when we talked earlier, I mentioned my mum and these expectations upon her. So many of those expectations were driven by the fact that her failure would come back on her family, that she wasn't allowed to fail. And I think some of that was because she hadn't been trusted. When we parcel out trust piecemeal, we say, well, if you prove this bit, next time I'll give you a little bit more trust. And then you do that, and I'll give you a bit more trust next time. Oh, that went wrong. Okay, pull a bit of trust back, and then wait for the next time. We're always in this cycle of trying to prove ourselves. And that goes beyond just husbands and wives. That goes into so many of our relationships with our friends, our relationships with people in the church. Or the church did that thing one time, so I'm just going to go back a little bit for next time. Hesitate to go back there. There are times when, of course, we should exercise judgment and discernment. But in this case, it's showing a picture of what a wonderful marriage this would be where the husband has full confidence in his wife and gives that to her. Because it says then straight away in verse 12, she brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. Is he trusting her because she brings him good, not harm? Or is the fact that he trusts her allows her to bring him good and not harm? And the wife isn't lazy in any of this. We talk about how she's a business person. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. But at the same time, in two verses later, in her hand she holds a distaff and grasps a spindle with her finger. She's doing manual work. She's doing everything. And I think it's why we really can't see this passage as something that says, hey, women, this is your list. This is go through this, get it all right, and then we'll talk about the whole marriage thing. Because actually, this list is incredibly hard for anyone to meet. You've got to be a business person. You've got to be successful at business. You've got to be really good at managing your home. You've got to be doing the work. You've got to be making sure that your family all have good clothes. You've got to be talking with everyone, speaking, instructing people. This is a long list of things. This is not a set of requirements that we say, oh, if you want to be a wife, if you want to be a good woman, you must do these things. But this is a picture. It says that a woman, a wife, a person that maybe we think less of in different contexts and different cultures, can do more than we think they can do. Where we think that sometimes about colleagues, oh, this person just can't be trusted. Maybe we think that in our community, oh, I can't let them handle it, I need to handle that bit. There are so many things where we can see someone's situation, their station, as being less worthy than our own, and therefore, oh, I'll just do those things, that they shouldn't let them do it. And so in a way, this can speak to all of us. The point I want to make next is about noble character. When we talked 2 weeks ago about leaders, one of the things we pointed out where there are failures of leadership, character of those leaders, it's not necessarily what they did. Sometimes what they did is why we noticed their character was problematic. But often it was their character that led to those things, and their continual character that prevented them owning their mistakes or learning from their mistakes or apologizing or admitting their faults. Their character was unchanging and flawed. Of noble character. This is a wife of noble character. And in the context of character, this passage is brilliant. And again, this isn't how to become a Proverbs 31 woman. This is how Proverbs 31 can shape all of our characters and provide wisdom for all of us, just like most of Proverbs does. And there's a lot we can drill into here. I've picked out a few verses, but you can probably look with yourself and, again, look with your MCs or with your friends, your partners afterwards, and look through this passage and say, what are the things that this is saying to me? But a few items of character that I saw in this that seemed really positive and things we could dwell on. Verse 15, she gets up while it is still night. She provides food for her family, portions for her female servants. This is about hard work, gets up whilst it's still night, getting up before the sun rises. In this country, that's pretty easy at some times of the year. And